Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's that time of year again. In fact, it's beyond that time of year again for some people. Time to book summer camp for your children. The question is, what is summer camp anymore, and how has that traditional residential camp experience fared during the economic downturn? Coming up later, we'll hear from Columbus Parent Magazine editor Jane Hawes. And also, Jane will be here to talk about their annual summer camp guide and more. And also Christina Rogers, she's the managing director of Ballet Met's Dance Academy and Ballet Met Summer Youth Camps and Mini Camps. She'll talk about how their camp has evolved to change with the times. Joining us now is Dave Devy. He's the director owner of Falcon Camp in Carrollton, Ohio. He started as a camper at Falcon in 1964 and stayed through as a counselor, program director, and associate director and director in 1984. Dave also is a board member of the American Camp Association Council of Leaders and accredits camps for the ACA. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Also joining us is Greg Copeland. He is recognized as a national leader in the design of camps and retreat centers and is an architect with Domaker Architects in Akron. He is a board member of the ACA Ohio Council of Leaders and has worked with the American Camp Association, Girl Scouts of the USA, YMCA, and the National Park and Recreation Association as a speaker and guest lecturer. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Oh, thank you.
Dave, let's start with you. What's changed since 1964? Anything much?
I don't have nearly as much hair. a number of things have changed. But at the same time, there are some basics, I think, that have remained very constant. Lots of the peripheral things have changed. Some of the programming, some of the way we deal with camp, some of the way we deal with our children. Basically society's changed since the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But I can remember being a camper wearing a uniform where, you know, your parents dropped you off and wrote to you once a week. And we used to have a barber come and give you a buzz cut. And you had to have a letter from your parents to not get a haircut. So there certainly are lots of differences from those days, but some of the same basic programming, some of the basic functions of camp and the benefits of children being at camp have stayed the same because they work. And there's been a great deal of value there, and perhaps that value has even increased as society changes some. Now we are certainly dealing more with social communications, lots more parent involvement, a lot more toys, I think children are, the expectation of excitement and immediate satisfaction is larger.
I was going to say, how do you compete with the the Disney worlds that we're so familiar with nowadays, whether it's a Disney World itself or, you know, any number of amusement parks and that sort of thing?
Well, I think some camps try. I'm not sure how effective that is in the long run. Other camps, residential camps in particular, residential camps that have a little bit longer term sessions, I don't think you do try to compete with that. I think what we do is more longer-term value,
mm-hmm.
rather than the initial excitement, more like, do you want ice cream every day for the next 2 weeks, or do you want a 3-foot sundae today? And so we deal in a little bit longer-term education, a little bit longer-term learning, a little bit more in-depth of what we're doing.
My guest is Dave Devy. He is the director owner of Falcon Camp in Carrollton, Ohio, and he also is a board member of the American Camp Association Ohio Council of Leaders. He accredits camps for the ACA. Also with us is Greg Copeland. He's an architect. He designs summer camps, and he's also a board member of the Ohio ACA. Greg, how have camp designs changed over time?
Well, I think certainly the thing that has impacted camps the most over the last 25 years has been the change in the regulatory environment. I mean, it's impacted all of us from a building standpoint, but it's also had a significant impact on camp. When I first started doing this, you could pretty much build anything you wanted to, where now, you know, regardless of the state, there's a whole layer of regulations that impact almost everything that you end up doing. And that's had a significant impact in design and, I think, from a owner's perspective, certainly the cost of building and operating and running camp. The two areas currently that represent the biggest challenges is that with the current building code, camp buildings now have to be sprinkled or fire suppressed, which can be a challenge when you're looking at a 10-week summer operation and, you know, suddenly you're having to go and sprinkle buildings. The second area is around water quality and sanitary waste, all things that nobody gets excited about, but they're a critical operation of the camp. From a program standpoint, I agree with Dave that, frankly, the intent behind summer resident camping hasn't changed since the 20s, and the benefit of an extended stay at camp, living in a community with children and counselors is still as significant and as vital and as important as it was then. So what, you know, we see, or at least our goal from our design standpoint, is to create facilities that will enhance that experience and foster that community and just ensure that kids have a really good time.
Greg, do you tend to be renovating existing camps and redesigning them, or are there actually new camps being opened that call for, you know, to start from scratch?
Sure. Well, actually both. I could say for the first 25 years of my life was all focused around taking existing camps and renovating and expanding them. Over the last 10 years, we've been involved with about 15 brand new camps from scratch. And that's included the Girl Scouts, the YMCA, and then the largest growth has been in the Jewish camping movement and then in medically based camps similar to the Paul Newman hole-in-the-wall gang camps. So there has been, I think, a significant interest and growth in looking at new development as well as continuing to maintain existing facilities.
So, Dave, the Greg mentioned largely Jewish and medically based camps are the ones expanding or starting from scratch with new facilities. Is it better that they're nonprofit versus profit because of the economy and the way it's been the last 3 or 4 years?
Greg's laughing because we have this discussion on a regular basis. I'm one of the very few for-profit camp owners in Ohio, and I think sometimes for-profits have a little bit different view of things than nonprofits.
I want to hear your view of things, but I.
Well, I think that no matter what you do, you have to run your operation as a business, whether you're nonprofit or for profit. Nonprofit doesn't mean you don't do things to make money.
Mm-hmm.
It just you have different ways of raising it. You still have to have a good business model in order to stay viable.
Right.
And so, you know, it's easier certainly to look for grant money and things like that if you're a nonprofit, absolutely. I tend to like the idea of owning my own business. I think we have the ability to offer a little bit more flexibility mm-hmm. and care on a much smaller, much more individual basis than a larger organization can. And I like the idea of you know what, I build it myself and I like it kind of philosophy. I agree with Greg that the regulations and things like that make things a little, have made things a little tougher to deal, whether it's for-profit or non-profit. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think a lot of regulations are good things and necessary things. But there is a real, I think one of the difficulties in the nonprofit world is to have a good business model and understand that that there still is profit and loss, no matter what kind of organization you are. You still have to function in a real world.
Greg, how far out do does a typical camp, would they plan for a major renovation or if they're going to build new? How long is that timeline?
It'll actually vary pretty significantly with the organization and frankly even with the state that we're in. Ohio's actually from a regulatory or development standpoint, it's still reasonable or fairly easy in terms of looking at development. The typical process that we will do with a camp, usually we'll start with looking at an overall master plan for the site, and that will take 6 to 8 months. If it's a not-for-profit, then there's usually a two-year fundraising period before they're ready to do major improvements. So usually by the end of that second or third year, they're moving ahead with the first phase of major development. Certainly, as Dave said, on the for-profit side, and we've had the opportunity to work with several private camps where, it's much more a decision around we have capital assets in place and when are we ready to move? And that often we're working with a camp on Cape Cod right now that they're looking at a four-year process. They know where the money is going to be coming from, and it's a matter of just sequencing how they want to go ahead and do the initial development. So certainly a much longer process with not-for-profits than it is with for a for-profit camp.
Are they still focusing on the summer camp experience, or is it changing up and becoming more of a year-round, trying to use the assets more fully?
Well, I would say the overall trend with the vast majority of camps that we work with is that they are either completely a year-round operation or a nine-month operation now. And both from a nonprofit side, it's very difficult to justify spending $10 or $12 million to use 10 weeks out of the year. But also, I think from a service side, there's a lot of extra benefit, whether it's serving retreat groups from their own membership on the weekends or outside rental groups, or a number of school systems are looking for places for outdoor education. So it becomes it makes sense for a lot of organizations to look at moving in that direction. And it also allows them to keep high-quality staff on a year-round basis instead of strictly for 10 to 12 weeks during the summer.
And as far as the bells and whistles, are you looking at, when it comes to the facilities, are they fancier than I remember them back in the day? Or, of course, that was back in the day. But
depends on when.
How fancy do they want to get now? Or are they trying to recapture sort of that?
Well, that's actually an interesting comment. I can tell you that we've done a lot of market research, and the number one things that parents care about is clean restrooms and showers. And from that perspective, it's still pretty basic. And we've been involved with camps that would not look too different from the way you would remember a camp in the 60s to really pretty sophisticated. And I would say that more of the higher-end sophistication actually relates more to the off-season market than it does to the summer market. And a lot of that relates, our experience has been, if you've got good leadership, the kids could care less about what the facilities look like.
Mm-hmm.
But we found that as you move into a year-on basis where you're having to heat and buildings and deal with them during the winter and so forth, that the level of quality has really moved from a residential scale kind of quality into a commercial scale. The challenge is traditionally what seems to have happened is that where you had these great warm woodsy kinds of buildings that were great for summer camp,
right,
that the tendency has been as they've moved to be more commercial that they've actually gotten less warm and more institutional.
Mm-hmm.
And we're making a very concerted effort now to try and reverse that. And a lot of it's just in the choice of materials,
mm-hmm,
and not so much from the shell or the structure, but to recapture some of what makes really almost people's memories of camp and make sure that stays as a part of it. There's no reason that we can't have really high-tech buildings that can almost manage themselves in terms of the interiors of the building,
mm-hmm,
or the infrastructure of the building, but that it still feels as warm and campy as it did, you know, when you were going to camp. So that's the real challenge, I think, right now.
Greg Copeland, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Greg Copeland. He is recognized as a national leader in the design of camps and retreat centers and is an architect in Akron. He's a board member of the ACA, Ohio Council of Leaders. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Dave Devey, and also joining us then, Jane Hawes of Columbus Parents Magazine. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Too many homeowners share similar stories in this housing crisis. Layoffs, higher interest rates, medical costs, expensive homes, and little, if any, help from lenders.
My house is being foreclosed on Monday. It goes up for auction.
I'm Neil Conan, The Road to Foreclosure, plus the opinion page. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation begins later this afternoon, starting at 2 here on 89.7 NPR News. It's 53 degrees in downtown Columbus. Cloudy skies today with a high of 67. A chance of rain with thunderstorms possible tonight, a low of 49 degrees. And rain showers likely for Tuesday with thunderstorms and a high of 67.
Support for 89.7 comes from the McCoy Center for the Arts, presenting the lecture Understanding the Speech That Transformed a Nation with Martin Luther King Jr. speechwriter Clarence Jones, Wednesday, April 20th at 7 p.m. Details at mccoycenter.org.
All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're coming back to the program with a tune from a 1990s Nickelodeon program about summer camps called Salute Your Shorts. If you want to hear it, you can find it on YouTube. There's some, fortunately, we don't have time to play the whole thing. But, and now we're going to continue our discussion of summer camps with Dave Devey and Jane Hawes. Jane, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann. Good to be back.
You had your annual summer camp
extravaganza.
It was in March.
Yes, it was
actually
in the March issue.
Are we too late? Is this all for naught? Is this a futile?
You might be getting on the waiting list here, okay, with some of these. Yeah, people, from what I understand, with some of these, the day registration opens, there'll be lines out the door for some of these day camps.
I noticed last year, mm-hmm, that camps that we usually participated with and didn't last year for one reason or another,
mm-hmm,
were sending us notices, mm-hmm, well into the spring, saying there's still openings,
yeah,
which was unusual.
Yeah.
So I was wondering about that economic downturn issue.
Yeah, I mean, this year with the camp guide, we probably assembled, I think, all told, about 152 listings. And I would say, working off the database from the year before, about 10 of them had disappeared or gone out of business. So I think that seems pretty standard for what you would expect with some of the shakeup. But, yeah, I think a lot of parents, too, are maybe looking more into, well, what can we afford? You know, how much does my kid really need to head off? Can they take care of themselves? Can I group with the other neighbors and just put together some kind of, you know, child care option in the summer? Because certainly with the day camps, you know, that they're filling a child care need,
right,
but they also want it to be educational and fun for the kids as well. So, you know, with the overnights, with the residential camps, I think we're seeing a lot of them are becoming more specialized. You know, they may serve a specific need, maybe for a special needs child. You know, there aren't as many, it seems like, anymore as Dave's doing with Falcon mm-hmm. Camp, you know, where it is the traditional overnight, you know, like we picture with Parent Trap, but, you know, maybe without as many hijinks, right, Dave?
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. No warring twins.
No.
Yeah.
What is submarining anybody?
Yeah.
Well, Dave, what is your experience given, you know, there's two or three camps like yours that are strictly private and kind of general interest, the camps we think of traditionally.
Right.
How has it been? I know we're bouncing back. Supposedly the recession's over with and, you know, jobs are being created. But what do you think?
Well, the last 2 years have been more difficult than what we're used to. There's no doubt about mm-hmm. that. Our enrollment was down a little bit. And I think camps across the country, everyone tightened their belts a little in anticipation of some tough economic times. This year, indications certainly seem that we're getting back to where we're used to being. Not quite there yet. And there are more and more studies coming out that are starting to show the value and the importance of play for children, of mm-hmm. putting them in an environment where they can be creative, be a little bit individual, be a little bit independent, and the importance of that in their overall health and in their overall well-being, including their work in school. So I would expect the pendulum to swing a little bit back in our direction as more people understand the value of what we do. I will say, I think, Jane, and it's you might not, I may not want to say this out loud too much, really. But
okay, nobody's
but
listening.
Fact,
don't
go
worry.
Ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dave.
Some of the resident camps, you're not going to see some of the same kinds of marketing for them mm-hmm. because we're all trying to search and find that marketing miracle where you do something and all of a sudden, you know, lots and lots of parents respond. Mm-hmm. And we're all in this current age of, you know, you can reach people in so many different ways. We're all, you know, just sort of trying to figure that out. What's the best way to reach families?
Reach the families that would be most likely to
yes.
send their kids to your camp.
So three of the spots in Columbus Parish Magazine were mine. I did use that as an avenue for marketing, but we also, I will say, we also tried several other different ways this year. And so, you know, from an economic standpoint, everybody has to be aware of the situation that we're in. I think on a national basis, the East Coast and the West Coast are doing better than the Midwest. And we have a little bit more to overcome economically.
We're talking about summer camps. If you have a question or comment for our guests, Dave Devi, he is director and owner of Falcon Camp in Carrollton, Ohio, and also Jane Hawes. She's editor of Columbus Parent Magazine. You can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You know, we have a new website up. If you go to go to the website at wosu.org/allsides, and we now have a comment section there that you can participate in instead of having to go to Facebook. But if you prefer Facebook, That's still available as well at All Sides with Ann Fisher. 614-292-8513 to make that call, though, right now. And Jerome in Marysville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. You want to talk about bullying.
Right. And first of all, happy Passover to everyone.
Thank you. Same to you.
Thank you. We sent both our kids to a Jewish summer camp in Cleveland several years ago. One child had a wonderful time and wishes to go back. The other child is a special needs child and was terribly bullied.
Mm-hmm.
And when he came back, he was a changed kid. And for almost a year, we tried to figure out what was happening. And we repeated phone calls to the camp. They said nothing happened at camp. Finally, we took the kids to counseling, and it came out that our son was bullied. It was so bad, our daughter had to go across the campgrounds to the boys' section and confront the boys who were bullying him.
So
when we found out what happened, the camp finally said, oh, yeah, we knew about it all along. And they've been lying to us about it the whole time. And when we asked for an explanation, their lawyer sent us a letter saying they were going to sue us if we continued to ask questions.
Okay, so you're
Hold on. This is important. The United Way, everyone, American Camping Association, there is no institutional support for parents who have problems. You either have to have the money to sue them in court, or you've got no redress. And okay. The United Way is basically paying for their lawyers.
Well, let's find out what Dave Dovey says. Dave, what about that? What do you do to protect the children in your camps from this kind of behavior? And thank you, Jerome, for your call.
Yes.
Dave?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Parents need to ask those questions. There are some standards if you are an accredited American Camp Association camp, there are some standards regarding that. There is an avenue, a complaint. We have a board member whose job is complaints and handling them and dealing with them. I'm very sorry to hear about your child. These kinds of things are camp directors' worst nightmares. And it's something that nobody wants to see.
Well, in schools,
are lots of training and lots of emphasis placed on this. I actually think camps are a much better environment to deal with these kinds of situations. I don't mean to deal with the aftermath of it. I mean to deal with how do we work, how do we eliminate bullying? How do we teach children how to treat each other with some respect.
Is that a topic when kids come to camp? Is that something you have a sit down about and talk about how you treat each other?
In most camps, I would say absolutely. Absolutely. It's certainly part of staff training in how we role model what's acceptable behavior, what's not acceptable behavior.
Do you find an increase in bullying these days, or have you seen it peak and now it's ebbing? What's your sense about that over time?
I certainly hear about it more than I see it.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, at our camp, it's just there's a culture that you create in an environment you create. At our camp, treating each other that way just flat out isn't acceptable. And that's from day one as you enter. So if someone does try to, children aren't perfect, and they're going to, everyone's going to bump to see where the rules are.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're consistent in those kinds of things and you have the appropriate role modeling, I would say to the father who asked the question that the pursuit is important. Because the environment that your child was in was not a healthy one. And if you don't pursue that, or if parents don't raise questions or ask questions, then the environment doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to throw in too, Dave. It seems to me a little bit unusual, not knowing all the details about that particular camp, to have a mixed population. It seems as if something wasn't getting addressed with, you have the special needs part of the population, and then the typical population, and something was not, connecting or communicating well there.
Sounds like there were some miscommunication, and I don't say that lightly.
Right.
I'm saying there's obviously something didn't work the way it was supposed to work.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when I was saying before about the thing with the increasing specialization. I don't think anyone likes to say, oh, let's segregate people by their needs. But right. Sometimes it seems as if, you know, maybe unless you really do have a staff that's equipped to handle a mixed population, you shouldn't go near that kind of a thing.
That's extremely important. And we are a mainstream camp. I am very open to accepting anyone who I feel our staff can work with and are adequately trained to do so. My staff don't have special training for special needs, and so I would not want them to be in a position where they couldn't comfortably manage things. And so there is a void in there. There's a gap in there, frankly. There are more camps being designed for special needs children, mm-hmm. and you have your camps where they were designed for mainstream children. But there are a number of children that have some more mild special needs, or who have make them a little bit difficult. Maybe they need a little bit more. Difficult's not the right word. A little bit more care, a little bit more oversight, a little bit more assistance.
Mm-hmm.
And there really isn't a place for them.
What about
not an easy place for them?
What about parents who are skittish in general about sending their child to an overnight camp? I understand, Dave, that you have a program at your camp. It's called Starter Camp. Is that something that's becoming more popular?
It's called Young Adventures.
Okay.
And yes, and it's meant to be. It's a little bit short term. It's a little bit shorter term, and it is designed to be the first time away from home walkthrough, a little bit more handheld, a little bit more parental in its care.
Mm-hmm.
And it is designed to reassure parents that the experience is worthwhile.
Doesn't everybody want to go to summer camp? What are parents' biggest fears? What are their concerns?
Safety.
What are they worried about?
Safety.
Safety. Like
Absolutely.
Physical safety or emotional safety?
I'm not even sure sometimes parents can define it.
Okay. They just aren't used to having them out of their sight kind of
right.
a thing.
Right. Yeah. I think it's more a perception than it is a reality. Statistically, children are safer today than they have been in the last 25 years.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that parents don't feel that there are, you know, that safety is safety is the number one. By far, there's no other question comes close.
Chandra from Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi, Chandra.
Hi. I just wanted to mention, I actually first went to camp when I was in sixth grade. It was with my school. And I had an absolutely wonderful time. I still remember one of the camp counselors today because I was so shy and I didn't really like to get involved in things a lot. And she really kind of touched me because she took an interest in the things I like to do and would get me into the group like that. So I thought it was really cool, and it was a really worthwhile experience.
Where'd you go?
Yes.
Camp Odioqua.
Where's that?
And how do you spell it?
I can't find it.
It's been years, but I believe it's somewhere near Hawking.
Okay.
Okay. Had an absolutely great time, though, and I'd really recommend it.
Great. Well, thank you for your call, Chandra.
Thank you.
Take care.
There are bonding and relationships that get established at camp that, for lots of different reasons, seem to be stronger. When we talk about memories lasting lifetimes, I hear story after story from parent after parent who went to camp after camp, who could sit there and rattle off the names of children in their cabins or who their counselors were. And these same people couldn't tell you who their college roommates were. But
well,
they remember their camp experiences, and it just is – it's incredible how many people, if you went to camp, you have stories about your experiences.
We have to take a break. When we come back from the break, we'll hear from a listener who has a very special experience to share with us. I hope Steve will stay with us. And we'll continue our conversation with Jane Hawes. Dave Dovey, I have to say goodbye to you, though, now. Thanks so much for joining us.
No problem.
Appreciate it. That's Dave Dovey. He is director and owner of Falcon Camp in Carrollton, Ohio. He's also a board member of the Ohio ACA. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
A stroke transformed John Sarkin. He became an obsessive visual artist whose work was as fragmented and cluttered as his mind had become.
I've learned how to visually represent my existential dilemma caused by my stroke.
We'll talk with Sarkin and the author of a new book about him on the next Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon here on 89.7 NPR News. And you're listening to All Signs with Ann Fisher. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of the program begins. And Clarence Jones, who was a draft speechwriter and close friend of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., will join our program to talk about Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech. That discussion begins at 11 on All Signs with Ann Fisher.
Support for 89.7 comes from Horizon Science and Noble Academies, providing college prep curriculum focusing on science and math. Information about Horizon and Noble Academies college acceptance rates is at horizoncolumbus.org.
And it's 53 degrees in downtown Columbus. There's a slight chance of rain today, otherwise cloudy skies and a high of 67 degrees. Showers and thunderstorms are possible tonight, a low right around 50. And expect showers for Tuesday, maybe a thunderstorm as well, and a high of 67. And more rain Tuesday night, a low of 60 degrees. All Signs with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Let's get together.
Welcome back to All Sides. That song, of course, is from the 1961 movie The Parent Trap. Didn't we all want to be Haley Mills back then? I, of course, wasn't born yet. But now we're going to continue our discussion about summer camps with Ballet Met Dance Academy Director Managing Director of the Ballet Met Dance Academy, Christina Rogers. Welcome to the show.
Hello, I'm so happy to be here. This is exciting. It's one of my favorite things to talk about,
and we
the funnest weeks.
Fun music, too. And Jane Haas is rejoining us. Jane, thanks for being here today.
Sure thing.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. Before we get started with Chris, we wanted to hear from Steve in Columbus. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'd like to share an experience I had at a religious camp when I was going through puberty.
Okay.
I met my first wife there.
And, like, how old are you?
Well, I'm 55 now, but this happened a long time ago, like around 1973, something like that. Anyways, it was really good for me because I got out in the woods, saw the expression of God, and I met her as my first wife later when we were married. And that was an expression of God, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for joining us, and thanks for listening.
Well, we divorced after 7 years.
Oh, well, it happens.
I'd like to
go
back and change it or get my money back.
Oh.
Expiration.
Okay, Steve, thanks for that call. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Just want to remind you, we have a new Facebook page. Go to wosu.org/allsides and check out the new Facebook page. You can comment right on the page if you want. So, Chris, tell us about Ballet Met's Dance Academy summer camp and how – you know, how is it different? Is it just kids going to dance? It's not. That's one of the reasons why we invited you. You're changing with the times.
Right. It actually started way before 2001, and I was lucky enough to become the director after 2001. It began with Gerard Charles. It was an opportunity for kids to try all sorts of kinds of dance, as well as interactions with other forms of arts. Dance is something that requires music. It requires acting. It requires visual arts and arts and crafts. So I always say it's the funnest week of the year at Ballet Met because even our experienced students who come, they always learn something new and they don't have to wear their pink tights and their black leotards. And those who are coming from outside of Ballet Met who maybe hasn't had dance experience, they have a great time too because they try so much and actually sometimes in some of the dance disciplines, they're a little bit better than our regular students.
You discover some untapped talent.
You do. And what's really exciting is we, besides the fun, which is the first rule, you know, dance and the arts are very much team sports. You have to do your personal best, and you have to do it with others in a choreographic style. You have to take responsibility for yourself, and you also have to have respect for all of your peers, the arts. that you're learning and your teachers. And I think it kind of helps with that bullying problem that they had mentioned earlier, because we're very much to the point of everyone's trying something new. Everyone's got this opportunity. We're all going to fail at something. We're all going to not be quite as good at something. And so our job is to support everybody else and put it together. And at the end of the week, we get to show our parents a little bit of what we've done. And they really put on quite a lovely sharing.
What day camp, do you see it gaining in popularity? Has it stabilized since 2001? What kind of numbers are you seeing, particularly in the last 3 or 4 years?
Right. The, what I noticed is when I first took over in 2001, 2002, mm-hmm. Was the fact that our camps were full by March 15th.
And how many do you have?
Well, at that point in time, we only had the summer dance camp.
Okay.
Since then, we have opened a Gahanna facility. And we, because everyone kept on wanting more dance camp, we actually put many programs into the Gahanna facility, partnering with some of our other partners that we work with, Columbus Children's Theater and Young Chefs Academy. And those partnerships actually came about because parents wanted more full-time day camps,
mm-hmm.
Versus necessarily the shorter camps.
From like 9 in the morning till 5 at night kind of a thing.
9 to 4.
9 to
right.
4 is the more typical,
so,
yeah.
So we were able to do that there along with working. We're currently at the MAC, McConnell Arts Center, and we're excited to be the dance component of their Camp Creativity.
Is this in Worthington?
It's in Worthington.
Mm-hmm.
As well as we're offering a couple camps there. So it's partially accessibility. It's knowing that you're being taught by professionals in the different fields. And that's why we do partner with these other organizations, because they can bring their facet of their professionality as well.
Jane, how much are camps slicing and dicing what they offer and mixing it up a little bit more? They're not strictly one thing or another.
Yeah, what I've seen, sort of the evolution of these directories over the last several summers, is the camps, in order to remain economically viable, are having to expand to offer a full day. And, you know, what I appreciate certainly as a parent is they're thinking, how am I going to make this rewarding or interesting and engaging for the child? The only time I ever got to experience a day camp myself growing up, I remember it was just one of those horrible, you know, all-purpose sports camps. We got thrown in there. We had a few scheduled activities, and the rest of the time we sat around out in the dead grass outside the high school, just staring at each other and loathing our existences. And I'm just, you know, I'm stunned.
It really was a great experience.
Yeah. But when I look at now the thoughtfulness that goes into the camps, the way they structure their days, they think about you know, making this fun and interesting, but also educational for the kids. I'm really amazed. It's encouraging, certainly, for, you know, from a parental standpoint.
Is there any concern that this whole day camp, particularly day camp, the residential is a little bit different animal, but that there's this whole it's part of the over scheduling our children situation?
Yeah, I think it certainly can play into that if you do. You know, what I think for many families is it is a child care option first and foremost to get mm-hmm. them through the summer. And it really, I think the challenge is to the parents. It's like, yeah, how do we keep this from becoming too much? You know, is there some good downtime built into their days? You know, it's a challenge for everybody.
How do you do that, Chris, at Ballymat's camps?
Well, of course, we have scheduled lunches, breaks, and things of that sort. We also try to, between the acting and the improvisation that's involved in these types of things, it gives them the opportunity to be a bit creative out of the box. But we also bring in, especially in the summer dance camp, we bring in company artists, so that they can just sit and enjoy and relax. It's kind of like the balance of their lunch. They mm-hmm. don't need to think about it. They just need to enjoy it. So they do go home tired. I will say that. But
not necessarily
bad. And I'm
bad
sure their
thing.
Parents
are very grateful.
It's not bad.
But we try to intersperse. That's why we have arts and crafts. That's why we have you know, the company artists. That's why we have all the different facets in order for them not to be dancing all day
mm-hmm.
and taking all of that into account and learning a lot of different things through fun.
Rachel in Findlay, welcome to the show.
Hi there. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Tell us about your experience at camp.
Well, this is at a sleepover camp. I used to go to Camp Moana a lot up by Mansfield, Ohio. And one summer while I was there, my grandfather had been ill. And while I was at camp, actually, he passed away. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time that anyone I had known or loved had died. And I really felt like I didn't have to leave camp for a day to go to the funeral, and I came back the following day. I felt like that atmosphere of camp, those fast relationships, that close bond, combined with the structured day, with periods where you could spend reflecting, that was a church camp, so in church,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, the time of day when you write letters home. I think that really, as a young kid, helped me sort of work through my first loss.
You know, it's interesting because, Jane, wouldn't you agree that under mm-hmm. those circumstances, a lot mm-hmm. of parents would just pull their kids out for the balance
and wouldn't send
them back?
Yeah, and what I was kind of struck by, too, is, I mean, one of the things that I find really valuable that have been for both my kids in the camps that they've been to is they have to learn how to bond with people right away. And I think that's so valuable to learn how to connect with others. You know, both my kids, I think, are a little bit on the shy side initially. And they have had.
Really?
Yeah, they are. Well, you know them, so they're not shy with you. But they are. And I think it's been really valuable because it really forces them out of their comfort zone, but in a good way. It gives them social skills. And I think a lot of the camps, the day or the residential, it's enabling that to happen.
I also, excuse
Go
me
ahead.
For interrupting, but I appreciate, I think it's important as a camp director myself to be communicated to if your child is having any kind of issues or if something such as that has occurred. We also have an intensive which lasts for five weeks where I'm over the students there. And camp directors truly want to help the young people. So I'm sure that probably your parents communicated with the camp director. And making them aware of that allows them to make the proper arrangements, maybe make the teachers or those around them aware of mm-hmm. it so that if a student is having a difficult time, they have that opportunity for that knowledge. It's really important to communicate, and I appreciate the fact that obviously your parents must have done that as well.
Rachel, how old were you at the time?
I think I was 11.
Yeah, that's early.
Was there any question that you would go back to camp?
My parents asked me, but I said I wanted to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And so they let me.
Well, thank you for sharing that story. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Take
for
care.
Your program.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Jean, what kind of advice do you give folks or would you give folks or what do you hear about in terms of picking that right camp for your kid, whether it's a residential or a day camp?
Mm-hmm. I think you kind of have to look at, I know I've been doing this with my son right now because he's still at an age where, you know, we're finding things for him in the summer. Sort of coming off of the school year that they've just had, I like to kind of sit back and think, all right, what do they need? You know, do they need a break or do they need something that's going to maybe focus on some things? You know, in his case, this year he was able to get into it's called the OWL Camp up at Ohio Wesleyan, run with the Junior League, and it's sort of like this accelerated learning type camp for a week. And that one will blow our budget for the summer, I have to say, but it's so worth it. And we saw what he needed was some reinforcement on some things and also to hang out basically with other geeks like him.
Mm-hmm.
We thought, you know, this is going to be a positive thing. He did a program at COSI this past, I think it was last month, for middle school aged boys mm-hmm. Interested in careers in science. And it was so cool to just see him in that environment with other guys like him. And, you know, so we did that. You know, but other times we've, you know, focused on maybe doing the sports. In my daughter's case, with the dance. But we've also tried to, you know, when she's not doing it, augment it with, you know, maybe she needs some art because mm-hmm. that for her seems
so
to be her dad.
A lot of
thing.
It's about talking with the kids.
Talk with the kids and just get a feel for where they're at emotionally. What do they need? Because you don't want to send them into the next school year then exhausted and worn out from what they did all summer.
Vicki in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, my son had a medical problem. He had a seizure disorder and was on medication a lot during his childhood and adolescence. And the problem I have with camps is that he had to take medication in the morning and in the evening. And if we gave it to him, you know, it was fine. The camps never wanted to take responsibility for if we forgot to keep some on hand. They didn't want to give it to him. And I never, I was wondering, you know, is that generally the attitude? They just don't want to.
I don't think so.
I think it's changed probably because there's all different kinds of medications now that kids are taking. We just have about a couple minutes left. Jane, Vicki, thanks for your call. That's a good question.
Yeah.
What camps typically do? I don't know. Chris, what do you do for a day camp?
Well, I know that we do have parents who bring in certain things, especially if there are allergies involved. And actually, we have a tutorial, if that makes any sense, to make sure that we are well versed in that. If it's a shot or something of that sort, we probably would prefer to maybe bring in a nurse or something of that sort, only for those purposes. But we do, again, it's that communication basis and making sure that everyone's very much aware and also communicate if for some reason something has been missed and medication wasn't taken in the morning that will affect your child's mood or their attention span throughout the day. It's important to communicate that so that we can do our best.
Yeah, it sounds as if this woman, her family may have predated. Now it seems so standard in all the schools that I'm quite certain that just about any camp is going to accommodate
nurse.
For that. Yeah.
Well, we've run out of time. The hour just flew by. Mm-hmm. Hopefully summer camp will for all those children out there that are going. And I want to thank you, Jane Hawes, editor of Columbus Parent Magazine, for joining us today.
Thank you very much, Anne.
And also Chris Rogers, managing director of the Ballymet Dance Academy. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us. It was a pleasure.
And thanks for listening. That's all the time we have. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.